Injured at work in a motor vehicle accident or had a fall in a public space? Speak to Your Claim Lawyers, a no-win, no-fee personal injury claims law firm that specialises in maximising compensation claims for injured people. Call 1-800-YOUR-CLAIM or yourclaimlawyers.com.au.
It's time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Good morning and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you're listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hapgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. Good morning to you, Redmond, and there's some breaking news.
There is some late breaking news from during the week, Patrick. It's
hang on, late breaking news,
late breaking
during
news
the week.
From during the
like
week.
It, like
that's what it's called. And well, this is how relevant it is. I'm not sure if you follow... We'll start off with, there's one in Nine News Melbourne and plenty of other news sites. And we,
yeah, I follow the news, yep.
Well, some shouldn't follow the news because during the week, around Hampton Beach, there was one of the most fierce sharks that lives in our Victorian waters that was spotted literally travelling along the shorelines.
Great white.
Of Melbourne. No, not even, worse than a great white. It was the humble, metre-long gummy shark.
And this made...
Oh my God.
And this made...
National Nine News.
In Melbourne. It's a bit like, was it Amity Bay, I think it was, in Jaws? What was, the local fishing town terrorised
like
by
that,
the seven-metre
yeah.
great white? I mean, there's not a huge amount of similarities between the two, unless you're into flake.
Well, I'm sure this will taste better than that big great white. I tell you what, I'm surprised there wasn't 150 people down there trying to catch this thing. But like the photo, I can't tell how big it is from the photo, but let's be honest, it's clearly a gummy shark.
You're giving...
Not even a school shark.
So you're giving Nine News the gaff with some let's be honest, some dubious reporting around...
It's just stupid.
Well, like, they're not fishermen, Aaron. They're journalists.
Yeah, I know, but...
It's got a fin.
Don't
it's a great white.
Spoken to then. It's got to fit into a great white. Well, the poor fella hasn't even got teeth. Do you know those sucker fish when you go overseas that clean your toes? I don't know what it would be like if it bit you.
A remora?
No, the ones overseas in Bali where you sit there and the little thing and the fish come over and clean your feet. Have you not seen them before?
I have.
That's what it would be like if a gummy shark tried to bite you. They'd clean your feet.
Let's get into the show. Abu Garcia celebrates 100 years as a real manufacturer, Redmond. Now, they... were founded in 1921 in Sweden. The first reel was introduced in 1941. And over the years, we've seen many different variations right throughout the Australian marketplace. I used to have one on a surf rod, actually.
Yep. Abu Garcia. They, I reckon they were I think everyone's sort of first reel.
Yeah.
Like as in back
as
in the
barrel
for
reel.
Me, yeah, yep. Back in the day.
Because so. They were quite, like, they, I think it was $140 for a barrel reel.
Decent
like,
reel, yep.
Exactly right. So, great to see. Congratulations to Abu Garcia. Chinese...
Abu or Abu?
Abu, sorry.
Abu.
I go Abu, but yeah.
I know, but you go Abu. Dancing instead of dancing.
Oh, prancing. Chinese Redmond, the easy craft. We're seeing this infiltrate the market, and we have had the guys on from Stabycraft over in New Zealand who are, in our opinion, and there's plenty of wonderful aluminium manufacturers out there, but, you know, Staby are right up.
We love the Staby.
Very, very top. But we're seeing these Chinese knockoffs and Easy Craft, which is basically a carbon copy of the Staby crafts. Yet whilst they look aesthetically the same, they are vastly different when it comes to the construction and just how safe these things are.
I'm all for new businesses and everyone having a go and having a crack at things, but this is just plain ridiculous and
plagiarism.
Just stupid. And I've seen numerous videos that have gone through social media from Stabycraft in itself, who actually, well, the main one video, the CEO actually, they did a big test. They actually purchased one of these vessels, kitted it out, exactly the same with Staby. And if you do want to watch it, it's on YouTube and also Stabycraft's Facebook page if you do want to check it out. And basically, if you are looking to buy one of these, I'd be checking this out. And they literally do the exact same test. Now, you probably say, well...
In terms of how they drive them, all those sorts of things, yep.
With stability. The engines in, engine out, like all these different ways. And it goes for a period of time, but it's well worth watching. Now, some people will say, oh, Stabycraft are only doing that because it's biased. Well, to tell you the honest truth, I've actually seen two of these vessels in person myself. I haven't had them on the water, but I have seen them myself. Now, I've seen enough of it to not want to go in one. I've seen the welds and whatnot, and I'm, like I said, I'm all for having a go, but these guys have literally copied everything about the Stabycraft. The look, where they've welded, all these certain things they've copied, but they've missed, they actually haven't got the quality anywhere close to what the actual Stabycraft is in itself. So just please be careful if you are buying one of these, because if you're out there, for example, chasing a big fish down off Lake's Entrance or Polo Bay, and you're in this easy craft and a weld goes on you and you're with your son or daughter or whoever it is, it's a bloody hell of a long swim back. So
I think the other thing is, if you buy one of these, yes, you're buying it cheap, it's going to be worth nothing after 3 to 5 years. Versus you buy a Stabycraft, it's like buying a Land Cruiser. They maintain their value.
You've also got to be very careful with purchasing your secondhand boats too, because one of them that I've seen is actually put stickers of the Stabycraft on their boat.
Yeah, okay.
So they've actually put the Stabycraft stickers on.
And this is where you really need to go through your VIN numbers and your hull identification
100%.
Certificates and these sorts of things to make sure that you know what you are buying.
Because, like I said to you before, one thing they have done good is they've copied the look, and it looks damn close to what it actually is. So there's not much difference between the actual two of the boats. So,
and especially if you're new to boating and you don't understand what the difference is between quality of welds and those sorts of things, which plenty of people don't. You know, it's one of those things that you really need to talk to the experts before buying, particularly if you haven't been in the industry before. So one of those things, Redmond. Now, there's been some great fish releases during the week.
You're pretty impressed with one of them.
Well, the Department of Fisheries, in most states now, like, it's almost a competition between states with who's releasing more fish. And the winners are recreational anglers. There's been 90,000 mull away that have been stocked.
That's a lot of fish.
Absolutely it is. Into fisheries right throughout New South Wales, which is just spectacular.
Yep.
There's been, 9,500 fish released.
A mixture of brown and I think a few more rainbows than browns, but in the Bostock Reserve.
Yep, which is fantastic.
This is where our fishing licenses are actually going, which is great to see.
Let's get into your week in fishing, Redmond. There's been some big winter whiting.
There has, and this time of the year where it's really important to fish our water temperatures and whatnot. Now, last week, I decided to film a hell of a lot for Salt Guide. We did 2.5 days of pure filming. We did barrel bluefin tuna. We did King George whiting in the ocean. We did numerous different things.
Species.
So, or even just techniques. And like, we weren't fishing as such. We caught a couple of fish, but it was more about getting the content out. And one of those ones was talking about big winter whiting and the water temperatures and what happens. So in the ocean, what happens is we've got natural currents that run along our coasts, which in the bay, we're sitting at sort of that 10.5, 11 degrees. It's bloody cold in the bay. Now, you might get lucky and get some fish up at St. Leonard's and anywhere through the bay, to be honest with you. I know Clifton Springs is still fishing well in that cold weather, but what happens is those big ocean whiting on the incoming tide then push down to the bottom end of Port Phillip Bay Heads. So they actually push into the bay. And then you can also fish the ocean on the other tide, and that's when we fish best in the ocean on the outgoing tide. And it's that warmer water that the fish are trying to stay in. Now, same as Western Port. I've seen some massive Western Port whiting in the last few weeks coming out the southern ends of Western Port. So these whiting aren't your traditional school whiting that we get throughout the year. They're not your 35 centimeter stuff. These are your 40s to 50s, potentially bigger. And everyone wants to catch a 50 centimeter whiting. And this is where you're going to do it. This is where you're going to have consistent captures some days. You might get 3-4 of them around that 50 centimeter mark, which is always great fun to catch. So if you are looking for a whiting, make sure you get down into that warmer current that comes in. I'm talking, it's an extra 2.5 degrees warmer, Pat. So it makes a big, big difference. Something that we are going to talk about in the coming, probably more coming months rather than weeks, is those big calamari, Pat, that start spawning on their eggs. Now, we love talking about big squid, we love catching big squid, we love eating big squid, but the one thing that goes to them, you've got to be prepared and ready when they're on, because when they're on, they're on. One squid always sort of swims with 2 to 3 squid, and that's how we get these big ones. Now, really, really good signs in both Western Port, in the ocean, and in bottom end of Southern Port, Phillip, those big, big squid are really making themselves present early. And what I mean by early, there might be a few more people targeting them, but they are there to catch. You can go out there and get your 10 squid, which is your bag limit here in Victoria, easily. You can get your 10 squid. And it might take 3 or 4 drifts, but once you find where they're sitting, you can tend to pick them off. Now, we're going to talk in depth in a few months about what we're going to talk about is actually how to rig for them, rigging stick baits for them. So actually putting little Tommy Ruff baits on baited jigs itself. Talking about getting your actual depth in your squid jig, so running them on off sinkers and the likes of that, and also picking your time. So, for example, if the swell's up in the ocean, you don't want to be fishing in the bay on the end of that incoming tide. You'd probably rather fish the end of that outgoing tide to get that clearer water, which tends to catch some squid. So it's really starting to shape up for a good spring, I guess. So it's probably more that springtime where it really fires up, but it's well worth targeting them now. Like I wouldn't blame you if you went down there and spent the weekend catching big squid with your family, because it's well worth going to do right now.
Let's take a look at what's biting around the country. New South Wales, we're seeing some really good yellowfin still being caught.
Oh, it's crazy, Pat. It's literally crazy. The bluefin haven't really coming super close yet.
We've been reporting consistently on Real Adventures of captures, you know, 100 kilometres plus offshore of fish 150 plus kilos in size, but just nothing that's remotely close to maxi trail boats, let alone, you know, your 6 metre.
Well,
offshore craft.
Well, speaking to Scotty from Burmy Bait and Tackle, and Scotty was saying to me, what happens these days, everyone's so fixated on where the long liners are fishing, because that's where the big numbers of bluefin are. But if you actually follow the rip charts, which people aren't doing at the moment, and actually picking a break in the water temperature, you're probably going to find bluefin there. But everyone's just waiting and waiting for these big schools at the commercial to hopefully push in closer. And the key word is hopefully. So you don't even know if they're going to come in. So Scotty was saying that more people, if you get out there, you might actually find that break and have a great... This is Scotty from Burmy Bait and Tackle, wealth of knowledge. So find that break in water and you're going to have good fun with those bluefin. But up, like I said, pushing up a bit further off JB and whatnot, it's not slowing down. I follow a few people on social media and I might even try and get the young fellas on one time to take us through there. I don't know, they work full time and they fish even more. So I give them a lot of credit, and they are literally, I know a couple of days ago they had 5 big yellowfin, a couple on the trawl, a couple on stick baits. So both methods working really, really well. They're just not going anywhere, these yellowfin. And if the water and the bait's right, there's no such thing as seasons for a fish. They are there purely for the water temp, which has the bait in it. So there's no rules in fishing, as we're seeing with these swordfish. I think Lee Rayner last week was saying there's only a couple of months of the year that a swordfish hasn't actually been caught now here in Victoria, and I think it was August, sort of around that August to October sort of period. So it's not much. There's not much in fishing that has rules. So you've
got
in
terms of how to catch and when to catch, you mean?
100%. Everything's just getting blown out of, like, these yellowfin just keep going and going. Like, they, you got to remember, Pat. I reckon 3 to 5 years ago, we didn't even see yellowfin. Like, they literally disappeared. But now with all the tuna conservation that's going into it, we're seeing more and more bluefin and yellowfin tuna along the coast of New South Wales and the whole world, in fact. So
does social media make that more prevalent, though, because everyone's spruiking their captures?
Yes, but no. You are probably right there in a way, but no, the yellowfin just weren't here. It's sort of like the kingfish in Porphyry Bay Heads, I guess. They weren't here years ago because the trapping in South Australia stopped them. They put a limit on all that, on that fishing, and now the fish are here in big numbers and they're getting bigger, thicker and thicker. But you and I have done the Alan McGlashan documentary, and to tell you the honest truth, it just keeps getting better and better, these tuna, and I think yellowfin are also with it as well.
Kingfish at Montague Island is 75 centimetres. The best way of targeting those, them at the moment, Redmen have been under the feeding birds with jigs and squid, the best baits to use. Drone fishing off Sydney.
Yeah, that this is cool. And I actually, have you got a drone that is capable to drop baits and whatnot? Have you got one?
Well, I've got it, yes.
You
but
do?
You need to buy the separate attachment release mechanism.
Okay, well, yep. I really want to have a crack at this. Probably, we actually should go down a 90 mile over the summer if we can pitch a couple of days, Pat. It'd be fun sitting on the beach having a few Pepsis off the beach, sending some big baits out, and we'll try and get a couple of big sharks. But Sydney, bull sharks, big bull sharks and a few other species as well. But the bull sharks are those, they're just so bloody aggressive and scary. That's one shark I'm purely scared of is a bull shark, and I've never even had an encounter with one, and I'm still scared of them. So they are, bull sharks, so aggressive, but you're always going to have your bycatch of your big stingrays and a few other bits and pieces along the lines. WA, that Bustleton jetty, Pat, snapper just continuing to come in. We spoke about this, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and it's still fishing well. And if I can recommend one bait, you'll remember with land base, you're casting. So it's not going to be easy to float an unweighted pilchard out there or whatnot. So you want to get your sinker out with a nice, strong bait. For me, it'll definitely be a nice squid ring. Pinned on the top of the squid ring, even run a snelled hook for a bit of extra security, and you'll be able to cast that out an absolute mile.
Plenty more to come on Real Adventures. We'll cover off on what's biting right around the country. You're listening to Real Adventures.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. We'll get straight back into a bit of a whip around on what's biting around the country, Redmond. Broome has seen some phenomenally sized sailfish. The weather at the moment is fantastic. And Carl Langdon, a friend of our Real Adventures show and host of Sports Day over in the West, he was up there last week and he sent me a few photos of some of the biggest Spanish mackerel you could ever possibly imagine. One of my favorite eating fish in the sea, Redmond. And the whale migration up there at the moment as well. It's just a place that is just totally full of life.
Just looking at the photos, they are some cracking Spanish mackerel.
Yep. So if you've got time to head up to Broome, it's well worth chasing. But around the CBD and Perth, Redmond, there's still some really good fish to be caught.
Yeah, you like I said, land base. You've still got your snapper. But I'm just going to go back to your sailfish. The sailfish have been in huge numbers out wide of Broome, and they're always really good fun to catch. But also fishing out of Perth, we're seeing the run of, and it comes off of our last segment of the show, Pat, is those tuna. We're getting school tuna. Well, there's tuna off Mallacoota. There's tuna in New South Wales. There's tuna in South Australia. And Perth have got this massive run of bluefin, school bluefin as well. So it's literally the whole southern part of Australia have SBTs in it, and they are cold water fish. So it's great to see. And tips to catching them, Helco divers are a secret weapon. Chris Vasileski from Gone Fishing Charters, I lost his darker coloured Helco, and it was the only one he had, and he nearly killed me because he reckons it's caught all his fish this season. This was a few months back, but Helcos are working really, really well when they are a bit flighty, because that calmer weather, once again, they do get a bit flighty. But if you do get a little bit of chop on the top of the water, those little just running those 4-inch skirts, and don't be afraid to put your teaser bars in front of them. That if you are in Perth, that we run here in Victoria and right around the country, so teaser bars will always help bring those fish up. And you're going to see a huge amount of fish caught if you do run them correctly.
Let's head to South Australia, Redmond. There's some really nice squid being caught at the moment.
There is. Brighton Jetty continues its squid fishing with literally bag limit captures, but after dark has been the success due to the shallow water. We're going to talk a little bit about floats quickly. If you are land-based fishing for squid, make sure that you are have it so it's not hitting the bottom. That's the key. Your jig can't hit the bottom, because once it hits the bottom, you get your weed and that's all over. But you want to make sure that it's close to the bottom. Now, a little tip for you guys that are land-based fishing. Don't be afraid to run a jig spike with a nice Tommy Ruff on it or a salmon, and that there is going to catch you your bigger calamari. And they actually run better off a float than a standard squid jig, because a standard squid jig is actually designed to actually have a sink rate. So it actually, the squid will eat it as it falls. That's the whole point of them. As the jig falls through the water column, the squid then eats it. When it's fixated to a float, other than the boat, the natural movement of the water going up and down, it's only probably moving 15 to 20 centimeters, you'd say maximum, off a pier with natural movement of the ocean.
Yep.
Where we're the likes of sinking up to eight seconds if possible. That's 6 to 8 seconds is my ideal scenario for a squid jig to sink, to give it the best time for a squid to eat it. So, like I said, beta jigs will work a little bit better on a float than normal, but they will tend to work as well, especially off a pier and during the night. And don't forget to have lights on your float too at night, because you'll be able to see exactly when you are on. And there's plenty of whiting around the York Peninsula, Pat, just quickly. And Point Hughes is also fishing really, really well as Point Victoria in South Australia for big King George whiting. And just got a question for you. You've experienced a lot of fishing around the country. What is your theory on sharks?
Well, in terms of they're getting worse, there's greater capture rates. And it's like, if you ask anyone in the West, they're everywhere. Yep. And whether it's because there's been a reduction in netting at times, there's obviously the rules and regulations with regards to actually taking sharks. Obviously, great whites have been on the endangered species register since 1996, but I think it's all the other species that we're seeing really large numbers of that at times you've just got to change position of where you're fishing because there's just so many sharks. So
I've got a friend that fished up in Queensland last during the week, just gone, and he literally goes there every year, the same week, same boys every year. They fished. They were lucky to get every year's getting worse, he thinks, yeah. And they were lucky to get a decent fish they'd get one or two decent fish. Then they would have to move kilometres from where they were fishing.
Luke Thompson from Perth Super Yachts, who we've had on our Real Adventures show before, he often, they'll take people right up to Shark Bay. Obviously, they've got incredible boats that they can that they hire out, and you can get in contact with Luke and the team from Perth Super Yachts for really, it's a once-in-a-lifetime sort of experience. But they have the same trouble. They get up there, they take all their boats, and then... Now they have phenomenal fishing for 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden you get one shark, and then the rest are just everywhere.
I know, I pulled it on you. What can we do about it? Like, I got no idea. Like,
well,
like, what do we do? Is it not? We can't do anything about it, or is it a cycle?
Well, there are so many of them. That's the trouble.
It's out. Like, you and I fished Cairns last year or the year before, whenever it was. I don't even know what year we're in now. We were literally lucky to get a fish to the boat after 10 minutes, 15 minutes on the spot.
Well, they talk
especially
about,
redfish.
They talk about culling, like we see that with kangaroos at different places around the country, and they're on a coat of arms. So we appreciate that species of animal as much as any, but potentially that's something to revisit. I think the challenge is you look globally around the worlds and the oceans that have just been raped and pillaged, and we're certainly reticent to
wiping them out,
invoke something like culling of sharks for no apparent reason. So I see that's where the challenges are. Redmond, let's get to the social club where we take your questions from social media. Every week we're giving away real brand gear. There's a fishing top and hat to be given away. So make sure you send in your questions to our social media pages, or better yet, download our Real Adventures app. First question is from David Lowe. Hey guys, is dual batteries in your boat a must, or can you get away with one, Redmond?
For me, it's 100% a must. It doesn't matter what size boat you have. I always want a dedicated engine,
yeah,
always. And then I always want to have dedicated accessories. So,
as is an isolator switch. This, so don't just. It's not your backyard job where everything's running off a couple of wires that are, you know, half-assed and hitched around,
yep,
your batteries. Invest in, there's no doubt from both of us, invest in an isolator and have twin
batteries.
Like,
how are you going to run your pie warmer if you don't have dual batteries? That's my question.
Well, I think one of the challenges sometimes is you go with, okay, hang on, I'm in a small tinny, I launch off the beach, I want to reduce the weight. But what we're seeing now with the advancement in battery technology is that weight is coming down dramatically. So you can afford to have two batteries that are going to be far lighter than once would have been 40 kilos worth of battery. So things are changing, and you can get far smaller batteries to alleviate almost that stress of if you drain one, you've still got the other, particularly with a well set up isolator switch.
So you'd always have dual batteries in your boats?
Absolutely.
Yep, I'm 100% as well. James, boys, how do you stay warm fishing in winter? I can't get motivated as it's too cold, and I'm fishing it hard to and I'm finding it hard to stay warm.
Well, you mentioned it before, Redmond, and we both have these set up in our boats. I don't in my small boat, but certainly in my big one. Absolutely. There's nothing better than
I was just joking there, but I know where you're going.
Food warm at night. Okay, I've got one for you here.
Go on.
Hyper Ice, which is a company dedicated to the construction of whether it be ice packs. Normatec is another brand which build pants, which are basically
thermals
recovery tools. Yeah, they actually also build electric heat packs that you wear around your waist, and there's a battery pack in the back, and it keeps it warm. Now, we have these pre-game for, there's probably 10 of them at the club, and I reckon I actually bought one for home because I enjoy it so much. I think it was about $300. They last for about half an hour, 40 minutes, and they're phenomenal. They actually massage as well. So Hyperice.
This is getting ridiculous.
Hyperice is the brand. So if you actually want to take portable heat, Hyperice is what I would recommend. Search it on Google and you can follow sort of the links.
I was going to recommend staying dry. That's the key to fishing in winter, is staying dry. Wearing your good bogs gumboots, which keep your feet warm. You can wear your Stormline gear, which is literally your quality overalls. There's so many different brands just to wear. What I wear is Stormline, and there are overalls that come up to sort of just below your boobs, so they literally sit just under there, and then just wear a good jacket. But the problem with jackets that I find difficult is actually fishing in them is a pain in the upper backside. Yep. So, like, I've got a big Axis jacket that I wear, which is my life jacket, and it keeps me warm, real warm, and I don't mind using it to travel or in between, but as soon as I get there, it's a pain in the backside to fish out of, like, trying to get whiting in, and, like, your arms, you feel like you're... can't fit through a door. Like, I tell you, like, you just can't move. So
it's like you're wearing a 6mm wetsuit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So if I was you, just traveling, getting a warm jacket, and then thermals underneath on and having a lighter jacket to fish out of, that's exactly what I would be doing.
Good on you, Dave. Good on you, Harry. David Lowe.
No, it was David and James. Come on, mate.
David and James, sorry. Dave, well done, mate. Send us a direct message. You are our winner of Real Brand Gear this week. So send us a message, and we'll send that straight out to you. That was... the Real Adventures Social Club.
Gearing up for Dometic. Always stay relaxed and hydrated wherever your adventure takes you with Dometic's rugged drinkware.
Welcome back to Real Adventures, and it is now time for gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts at home with Dometic. And on the line, we have Chris Vasileski from Gone Fishing Charters, who has just ended his last few months with a cracking sessions on the albacore tuna out of Portland. So we're going to get a bit of a wrap-up from Chris to take us through his whole trip, well, I guess the whole few months that he's had down in Portland. Good morning, Chris.
How you going, Aaron?
Going not too bad at all, mate. And you've had a pretty bloody good season this year on the bluefin tuna out of Portland. Now, what I want to get you, I really want you to go in detail today. I want you to talk about the difference in this year to other years. I want you to talk about the lures that have worked best for you. Also, a bit about the albacore tuna. We're going to talk about water temp, and we're also going to talk a little bit about the barrel tuna. But let's start off with, first of all, where the fish have been and where they haven't been.
It's definitely been a different year compared to other years. This year we've found ourselves travelling to the shelf and sort of beyond to catch probably 95% of all our fish, where other years we can sort of, go to the shelf early and then sort of by mid-May, where, in under the 100-metre line, basically the fish will push in and we can get the job done in close. But this year we've found ourselves pushing over the shelf a lot, which has been frustrating, but the fishing has been not too bad.
Do you find when fishing on the shelf, Chris, for the bluefin, that they're probably a little bit easier? Now, let's make it a little simpler. You often fish in close around Portland, so we'll talk about the behind the lighthouse at Nelson and even up to the Hammer off Bridgewater. You quite often talk about those areas you target after a big blow or when it is a bit windy, so those big nor'westers, for example. But do you find that fishing the shelf, it's they feed a bit easier out further than what they do in close on an average basis?
Generally, previous years, yes. Like I always say, when you find fish out on the shelf, that's when you're going to get your 7, 8, 9 ways, You sound fish up and generally it's multiple hookups. But in saying that, this year's been weird. Like we were sounding up lots and lots of fish and like, in that prime depth range, in between sort of 30 to 15 metres, and not getting any strikes.
So you mean in the water columns, you're out of the shelf, obviously, so you're talking about that, say, 15 metres deep in the water column.
Yeah, exactly. So when we're fishing shelf, I'm only looking at the top 80. I don't really care what's under 80 metres. So so when I do me sounder and that, I just top 80, and that's all I'm worried about. And this year, we were marking a lot of fish. Sometimes you'd get from, the whole screen would be full of fish in, 15 metres and, 10 metres, 5 metres, and you wouldn't get a touch. And it was like, what's going on here, you know? Generally, when you find that out in the shelf, you've got a seven-way within minutes, you know? But this year was a bit funny. You did have good days where you were getting multiple hookups, but some days it was real tough going, which was very surprising. Like, you expect that in close, but not out there.
Take us through the size of the fish. Now, we're seeing, we'll call it back home, because you and I are both from that sort of Queenscliff area where we do a lot of our fishing out of. We had a massive run of those fish from, say, not much smaller than 18, 20 kilo, right up to close to 50 at times, let's be honest, out in front of Barwon Heads and whatnot. Now, the fish size that you're getting, did you find this year, what I've seen on social medias, and did you find that the fish this year were probably one of the smallest we've seen in years, as in the bluefin?
100%. Like, those fish early, like, coming from, like you said, coming from Queenscliff, like, you know, April, catching 18 to 22 to 25 kilo fish, to going to Portland expecting, oh yeah, like, you know, we're going to get those sort of 10 to 15 that we generally get. Sometimes you'll get a school of 18 kilo fish. We found a lot of our fish were 6 to 8, 8 to 10 kilo. Very tiny, probably one of the smallest schools I've seen in, oh, I don't know, maybe 10 years.
Yeah.
Out of Portland.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Talk about, you've got to obviously put some stuff in the water to be able to catch these fish. Now, your lures, I know that I lost one of your halcos filming for Paul Worsing with his eyefish show with yourself, which you were a bit annoyed at me about, but we'll blame Paul for that because he was yelling at me. But we take us through this year, so we'll start with skirted lures and then we'll go into your, sort of your diver range. Give us your top sort of 5 to 10 bits and pieces that you put out.
I don't reckon I could, mate, to be honest, because it was so, there wasn't one standout. Oh, there was a, like the Halco obviously was a standout, like, diver for me. But skirt, off the top of my head, I could not give you one to say, yeah, that was my standout skirt this year. It was a lot of chopping and changing and, just thinking back on the season, mate, I really can't. I couldn't give you one.
Did you find on certain days that certain colours worked specifically to that day, or was it just all over the shop most of the time?
It was just all over the shop, and like I normally run a mix, you know. So I'll normally run two or three divers and the rest skirts. But this year, I found myself running probably more divers, less skirts, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay. Now we've had this massive run, and you're not far off. We're going to talk a bit about bringing the boat back from Portland. We've had this fantastic run of barrel bluefin out of Apollo Bay, which you and I have both been a part of. And Portland's probably, let's just be honest, Portland's the home of barrel bluefin tuna. It's a place where it's got a very good safe haven. It's got your Portland Harbour. It's got a nice calm run basically from Portland to the Rock on average. And then quite often the fish are in close there, that sort of 35, 40s, right out to that sort of 70, 80 metre line. So you're relatively protected, even though it is the Southern Ocean. But this year, this is only speaking to yourself and a few others. Let everyone know about what you've noticed different-wise with the water temp, the bait, and everything that hasn't quite been what it has been to have those barrels there, hence why the barrels haven't been there.
No, it's been weird. I remember the first day, my first trip, I sort of drove out looking at the water temp and going, oh, geez, that's odd. Like, obviously, everyone's sounders are different, the way they're set up with water temp. They're not all going to be the same, but I was always asking the other charter guys, you know, what water temp you got, and everyone had high water temp. So, like, basically from 40 metres to 300 metres, that early May, the water temp really didn't change from 17 degrees.
Which is warm.
Yeah, it was just a constant 17 degrees. Like, even if you pushed out to sort of 500, 600, 700 metres, it was 17 degrees everywhere. And it stayed like that, I reckon, for a solid month, if not more. It wasn't till the weekend just gone that I actually noticed, like, where we generally get those barrels, you know, in between, say, the Rock and the Lighthouse and Bridgie, that water temp was sort of 15 and a half, 16 degrees. So yeah, it was, I definitely think it was that. The reason we haven't seen any barrels coming out of Portland is because of that water temp, but who knows, in the next few months we might see something. But
well, the best
it was very disappointing.
Now,
yeah, very disappointing in May, June.
One thing that we haven't seen for a couple of years, I'm going to go a couple of years, probably even more than a few years, the odd people obviously getting them, but the albacore. Now, as they're known, chicken of the sea, and I've had some fantastic sessions, like I said, a long while ago as well, like on the albacore tuna, and you're fishing on the other side of the shelf there. You guys had a tremendous last few weeks on the albacore tuna.
It was well, the fishing, the later the season got, the fishing actually got better. Like the fish sizes came up. They probably went back to that sort of, you know, 12 to 15 kilo fish, even the bluefin.
Yep.
The last 2 weeks of our season, the albacore, I haven't seen an albacore run like that, I reckon, for maybe 6-7 years.
Yeah.
And
yep.
There was a couple of days there where you could have caught as many as you wanted, and they were 15 to 25 kilo fish.
Big fish.
So they were nice fish. So it was good to see that, but are those fish always there? We don't know, because generally mid-June to mid-July, end of July, we're really fishing in close because all our tunas are, you know, in that 100-meter range.
Yep.
Probably no one ever pushed out to, you know, 1,500, 2,000 meters that late in the season. So who knows? They could be there every year. We don't know.
How far out is that 2,000 meters of water, just roughly?
Roughly, it's on the borderline of sort of 30 miles. So you're looking at about 20, 28 miles from the closest point of land.
Which is roughly around 60 kilometers.
Yeah, so it's a fair way. And that was the hardest thing this year was it was having to travel so far, day in, day out, just to sort of get your bag of fish for the customers. It was nice when it was flat and you could do 25 knots. It was actually quite enjoyable, but when it's blowing sort of 15, 18 knots, then it makes it a long trip home.
Well, there's no offshore, 60 kilometres offshore, no. Is there? You're listening to Chris Vasileski from Gone Fishing Charters. And before we wrap up with Chris, I know there's a little bit of a plan in your head at the minute as you attempt to bring this boat back when we get some decent weather from Portland down to, I guess, Queenscliff. Take us through a little bit of a plan. You might drop the boat off in Polo Bay for maybe a month or so and maybe a couple of midweek charters?
Yeah, maybe. I'm done at Portland now, so I'm just waiting for a weather window to bring the boat back. My plan is, as soon as I get a nice day, maybe bring it back to Polo Bay. Maybe leave it there for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, just see what the weather does, see what the fish do. And then obviously come home, take the boat out and gear up for September squid snapper offshore, I suppose.
I'm looking forward to that. It's not too far away. You've been listening to Chris Vasileski from Gone Fishing Charters. If you do want to jump on his boat, maybe in the next month or so, you might be able to land yourself a 100-kilo barrel bluefin tuna. Make sure you follow his social media pages and keep up to date with what is going on with Gone Fishing Charters. Thank you for joining us on Real Adventures this morning, Chris Vasileski from Gone Fishing Charters.
Thanks, Aaron.
That was Gearing Up for Dometic, mobile living made easy.
Now it's time for Red's review for Club Marine, and this is something that every boat must have, Aaron.
Yeah, when you say every boat, I agree, every boat. Even the rules and regs don't actually account for you, I would still have it. And what I mean by that is EPIRBs. EPIRBs will save your life. Emergency position indicating radio beacon. It is literally a must-have on your boat. Now,
and they're not expensive. Like,
not to save your life, 100% not.
For a couple of $100, you can get a GME. And we were just searching through Google. There's plenty of different websites you can get them for, but they are a must.
Yeah, I think the GMEs, I think they're up towards that, what about 400 or something?
No,
the more expensive ones, 400.
They start at 229.
The one that you've got in front of you there, which is the Rescue Me Ocean Signal, that's the one that I have in my boat. They're about 350.
Yep.
And that's what I've got in my boat.
What about position of where you put the EPIRB in the boat?
This is 100% a big one. Now, if say, for example, Kari and Finn come on the boat in Port Phillip Bay. Now, this is going to sound a little bit contradicting because I did say that you must have, oh, I would always have it in your vessel, even fishing in the bay. But I don't really say to Kari in that, oh, if we're going to see seals with a little one, the EPIRB's down here, this and that. But anytime I go actual fishing where it's slightly rough or whatnot, most of the boys I fish with know my boat anyway. But my EPIRB is positioned literally on the passenger side at their legs.
Yep.
It's got its own EPIRB. North Bank actually in their mold have an actual spot for your EPIRB, and that is where mine sits.
Yep.
Now, I'd say to anyone that I'm traveling, fire extinguishers there, this is here, life jacket's here, I'll go through my safety equipment, especially these big runs of Apollo Bay. If I cop a wave and end up head over tits, but you need to know where it is. I know where it is, but the boys can literally reach down and grab that EPIRB and see and actually set it off.
How do they work? So they're used to notify and alert search and rescue boats as soon as a person is in distress or in need of immediate rescue. So it transmits that signal via satellite and then you can triangulate the position.
And I'll tell you the honest truth, setting them up isn't a two-minute job. Now, the reason I know this is because I just did my Rescue Me one when I bought the boat, say, 6 months ago, whatever it was now. But it was it's not a two-minute setup job. You need to have all the numbers off the box on the actual EPIRB. Then you've got to have your boat details, contact details. So it's not, when I say it's not a 2 hour job, but it's probably a 20-minute job of actually sitting down and actually getting the details correct, because you need to have, I have different emergency. I had Kari, my partner, I had Craig, my manager, and I had my mum and dad on there too. Yep. So if something, they can't get a hold of one, at least it's going to go somewhere. And just another tip with your EPIRB too is, not that this is coming back to EPIRB, is when you're fishing somewhere, I tend to, for example, not at home, but Kari, I'll be home around 4 o'clock. But if I'm going to Apollo Bay, Kari doesn't really care what time I'm going to be home, as bad as it sounds.
Yep.
But Craig, I'll be on the phone to Craig the night before, and I'll say to him, I'll be in around 5 o'clock. And that way, if he hasn't heard from me from 8 o'clock, or no one's heard of me from 8 o'clock,
yep,
he knows that, all right, he's usually going to be, he reckons he's going to be home around 5-ish. And Craig's sort of that person that I speak to. I work with him, so that you just naturally have that conversation.
But everyone has that person.
Everyone has that person
within their life that they 100%. Constantly talk to.
Yep, 100%. And that's what I do recommend. And that comes, like I said, drifting a little bit away from the EPIRB side of it, but it's sort of a must to do as well.
Now, there's two kinds, Redmond. There's obviously the GPS and the non-GPS. Non-GPS, the beacon, it can only be localized within 5K versus if it's a GPS-enabled one, it's 120 meters. So spend the extra money, get a GPS-enabled one. And as we said, you can get EPIRBs from every good marine dealership, tackle store, or you can purchase them online. So reg review for this morning.
And just because the rules and regs in Victoria say 2 nautical miles offshore is the way you need, and you don't actually travel any further than that, just because it says you need it there, just be mindful that if you're in the bay chasing snapper, crossing it from St. Leonard's to Carrum, for example, and it's 25 kilometres, and you go over in the middle there, how the hell is anyone going to find you?
Yep. So, and we've seen people over the last 12 months have exactly those issues, and we've seen deaths on our
boats. 100%, exactly. So, yeah, Reg Review is EPIRB. Get yourself one.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Been a big show of Real Adventures this morning. If you want to follow us on our Real Adventures socials, make sure you do so on Instagram and Facebook, and better yet, download our Real Adventures app. It's got our podcasts, it's got tips and tricks, as well as recipes from some of our favourites, including our man, Sammy Goodwin. Red's tip for this week. Redmond, we're talking life jackets.
We are talking, like a bit of a safety show. I do apologise for that, but we're all about safety here at Real Adventures, and life jackets is one of those ones that there's so many different styles you can get, but it's not a review today, it's a tip. Now, if you're going out in the bay, I'm confident to say that I don't need to have a life jacket on if I'm chasing my whiting of St. Leonard's. I don't want to have my life jacket on. I've always got my jacket when I'm travelling. If by myself, I've got my bum bag or whatnot.
I was going to say, if you do though, use the ET version of your hip pouch.
Yeah, the small one. This is what I was going to talk about, little ones versus big ones. Now, what I do for storage, now this is a good tip. You've got to remember that those bum bags and your chest mount ones are just like literally the small U-shaped ones that go over your shoulders. You've got to literally change the gas canisters every year.
Yep.
You've got to be on top of them every year, and you can forget. Now, to cover your backside from the water police and yourself, because these will actually protect you as well, you know those big PFD foamy ones?
Yes.
If you've got it, I run five of them in my boat at all times. I don't take any more than five ever. I've got five of them tucked away under my seats in my boat that never come out. So number one, for requirements, I'm covered. Number two, for backup, if those other ones are going out of date, I can get the boys to wear them once. I've got them still in their plastic, to tell you the honest truth. So they literally work an absolute treat. You don't have to have you don't have to literally pull your gas canisters out. Oh, what date? Oh, 2012. Oh, geez, I'm out by 5 days. At least you know it's in the boat and it can be save your life. And it also doesn't have to have that used by date either. They last forever, Pat. So Red's tip this week is get those big foamy life jackets, put them in the cabin, and they will literally stay there forever, and they will save your life as well as save you a few $100 in getting fined if you do slip up a few months on your actual cylinder. It's now time for the flying gaff, Patrick.
No, it's not. We're not. Oh. It's the feel-good fishing story of the week, Redmond.
Oh, you did want to say this. I apologise.
You have a great story on Murray Cod that was saved during the week. Now, there's irrigation channels right around Australia, and quite often some of these irrigation channels will have some of the most extraordinary fish you could possibly imagine. And there's a great story during the week. I think it was about 40 Murray cod that were saved.
Native fish in general.
40 native fish, yep. Was it?
So Murray cod up to 80, a number of yellow belly.
So 80 centimetre Murray cod was saved when they were doing some maintenance work on the irrigation channels.
They were. Several fisheries officers assisted the Goulburn Murray Water with the salvage alongside a Bort Angling Club, and the fish were all released into a nearby home, the Loddon River. Is that how you pronounce it? Loddon River?
Yeah, Loddon River.
Loddon River. So that's where they were transported to, which is pretty cool. 40 native fish, 80 centimetre Murray cod, and look at all the fishery blokes in the photo claiming that they've caught these fish.
They're very happy.
They're very happy. So that's pretty cool. That's a good story for fishing. Now, can I throw you to the flying gaff?
Yeah, the flying gaff's pretty simple this week. There's been some Sydney boaties that have been fined $16K
for $16K?
$16,000.
Yeah, right.
For lying,
I was reading, yeah,
on their declaration forms trying to get into Queensland to watch the rugby. So they're obviously trying to get in to watch... And what was it? I think it was the State of Origin, rather. And they're in this 34-metre super yacht. And it's been a little bit more expensive than they first would have thought, which I dare say if you're chartering a boat from Sydney to Queensland, it's going to be expensive enough as it is.
I was going to say, the way the boat that they're in and what they're doing, I don't think $16K is going to really affect their pocket either, Patrick.
That's a good point.
That's a good point.
I'll give the gaff to ourselves this week. Hope you've enjoyed the show. We'll see you next week on Real Adventures.
Want to witness the world's biggest football game? Head to iCanWin.com.au, predict Australia's score with a crystal ball, and it could be you and a friend at the FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022 semi-finals, all thanks to McDonald's. Maccas, together and loving it. TNCs apply.